Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
I witnessed a style of whistle that I'd never seen before. It really made me go on a thought-provoking bit of research on the history of the whistles in football and their evolution to what they are today. We have this story and more coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And you know, this past weekend, I got to enjoy the company of some great football historians and researchers at the Western New York's PFRA mini convention, they call it. It was a meeting of some great minds and some folks that got to see, you know, once a year you get to get together and see these fellas. And there were some of them brought some great exhibits from their collections because they are just that avid of football fans and research. And one such item that I got to see and it really caught my eye was a whistle that was encased in plastic a friend of mine, John Steffenhagen, had that he had inherited from his great-grandfather, Leo Lyons, who was the founder and the coach of the Rochester Jeffersons, an early APFA NFL squad. Now, it was interesting to me because this whistle was black in nature and appeared to be plastic. And he said, the story was, I believe, one of the Nesser brothers that played from the Columbus Panhandles had given it to Leo Lyons back in the 1920s as a gift of mementos from the very first NFL game, is what was claimed, I believe. And we'll have John on to talk more about that whistle. But what it really got me thinking about is I asked John, boy, what is that made from? I didn't realize they had plastic whistles back then. And he said it was made from Bakelite. And Bakelite, I'm familiar with. I know they had Bakelite radios, and it was a form of a plastic-like substance, but didn't last very long. And it was revolutionary at the time, before plastics and hard rubbers made the scene into products like we know them as today. But having a Bakelite whistle, I thought that was very interesting. But it sort of propelled me on the evolution of a piece of equipment that's in football games all the time, and that's the whistle. Now, so I did a little bit of research on this. I went to and got some help online, and I went to a site I found called whistleawaycrime.org, and it sort of tells a history of the whistle, of one of the references I'm going to be using. And I guess back in 200 AD, I guess this would be, ancient Chinese used whistles that were made of reeds and other types of sticks and plants to help them to during war, to help soldiers and civilians to flee death and suffering. It was used as an alert, sort of like we would use today, like a siren. So they had used these whistles, and then it goes into 11th century Europe, and they talk about there was wooden carvings of people blowing bone pipes, bird bone pipes, that made a whistling sound. So whistles made from reed in China, made from bird bones. The story takes us to the early 19th century, where whistles have been carved out of wood. And some have been made from bones that have been carved that were make so that you had a whistling sound and coming out of it. Then my attention was taken to a site called thewhistleshop.com, and they are sort of a museum of whistle history, which I really didn't realize there was. And they talk about how tin whistles were made in 1843 by Robert Clark of England, borrowing design from wooden whistles that he had owned when he was a kid. And he made a company out of it. He had the Clark Tin Whistle Company, and I guess they're still in business even to this day over in England. And it really took it to a new heights in when football became football. Author Timothy P. Brown on his fieldsoffriendlystrife.com had a really interesting article back in March of 2018 where he's talking about whistle history. And in 1878, there was a man that made a whistle that had a P in it. And because that really helped out law enforcement in England's Scotland Yard, because they were trying to look for a device that would make a sound that would be carry a long way. They had, I guess, rattles that they carried in their hands, the peace officers, and they'd shake these rattles, and you could hear it from some distance, but not the distance that they were looking for. So in the early 1880s, after this gentleman in England had created this peed whistle, Scotland Yard adopted it, and you could hear these whistles up to a mile, and it was exactly what they were looking for. So soon after that, in 1883, the whistles were starting to be used in rugby and soccer matches in England. They came across the pond, across the Atlantic Ocean. In 1887, they were starting to be used in American football, as Tim says, to stop fouls and to stop plays, which caused a little bit of confusion. And later on in 1904, some of the rules had to be adapted so that the whistle would only be a signal to stop play, because it was kind of confusing if when a foul occurred, they'd blow a whistle and players didn't know if they should stop playing or what was going on. And they also blew it at the end of the thing. So it had to be a truly confusing game with that. And that's, we talked a few weeks ago about the penalty flag, how that came in. That sort of took over a little bit for, that blowing a whistle when a foul occurred, you threw the flag or threw the handkerchief. So, that's kind of an interesting thing. So I guess I did a little bit of history in Bakelite, which was the whistle that I witnessed that John had here. It sort of came in to vogue, Bakelite items, sort of in the 1920s, so right in that era, right up through the early 1940s. So, that makes a lot of sense that there was that whistle made for one of the early NFL games made out of Bakelite. Very interesting indeed. Now, I think they saw that the quality of Bakelite wouldn't stand up, and I really think that they started to go to the metal whistles. And metal whistles are nice, they're very durable, the metal peed whistles, and they last almost forever, except when you have extreme cold, as many climates that have football do get at the end of the season. You get into late October, November, December, January games in the NFL, and it's extremely cold. And this really came about to a head with metal whistles at the Ice Bowl in the 1960s up in Green Bay on the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field. When the Dallas Cowboys visited the Ice Bowl, there was only one whistle in that game. And we talked about this before. I know I won't bore you with the whole long story, but the only whistle that occurred was when the official blew the whistle to mark the ball ready for play for the opening kickoff. The whistle froze to his lip. He ended up pulling some of his skin off his lip. The officials got together and they put the whistles in their pockets the rest of the day. And sort of made a statement there that I think manufacturers of whistles really listened to. And that's, I think, when they started really pushing the plastic whistles that are so prevalent today. There's still metal whistles out there with plastic tips on them and things like that. And there's, just so you know, there's basically three kinds of whistles that guys use on the field in football, two that are really extremely prevalent. You know, you have the lanyard whistle, which is, you know, hangs around your neck with a string around it. They have the finger whistles, which are very popular, and my choice and preference that I like. And you have a whistle that you hold in your hand that's on a short lanyard. I'm not very familiar with that one. I don't know of a lot of people that use the short lanyard whistle. But I would always use, when I officiated, I learned on a lanyard whistle. So I'd always have a lanyard whistle on my bod, and I'd also have the finger whistle. And there's some different advantages to both. You know, a lanyard whistle, it's nice because your hands are free. So if you get the end of a play and you have to signal like it's the kill the clock, you have two hands going, you have that. You can blow your whistle and do it at the same time. Where a finger whistle, of course, prevents one of your hands from going into the motion or signaling that you need to show to stop the clock. But there's mechanics in place for that, where you'll blow your whistle to stop that the play has ended. That's all it is. It's a signal that play has ended. It's not ending the play. It's just signaling the ball has become dead, either by out of bounds or a player down by rule. And you want to make sure that, you know, you can blow that whistle so it's clear and loud enough so the players know that, hey, action stopped. I'm signaling that. Then you can stop the clock or signal touchdown where you need two hands, or wave incomplete pass, or whatever you need, any other signals that you might need, a safety perhaps where you need both hands to make the signal to clearly define to everybody what's going on. And, you know, that's some interesting things. So, but the lanyard whistle, it really is one that gets people into trouble, because if you keep that in your mouth the whole time, you can have what's called an inadvertent whistle. And that's a whistle that's blown when it's not meant to be blown. It's either an official, you know, inadvertently blows it, you know, out of turn, or he blows it, thinks he sees something, the ball being dead, when he really doesn't. And it's an embarrassing moment, believe me. I've told you about a few of my inadvertent whistles I had as a young official, and they're not a pleasant experience, and nobody likes them, that's for sure. So, you know, those are just a few of the things. And, you know, these whistles they have now, these P-less whistles that are plastic, are just, you know, fantastic, where you don't have that P rattling around there. Because, you know, not to be gross or anything, when you blow a whistle, you still blow moisture in there, so basically you have your spittle in there. And, you know, that usually it was a corked pee or a light, real light plastic pee that would be in these whistles, and moisture could prevent them and make them stick to the side. And okay, we're getting disgusting here, but it does happen. So these pee-less whistles are really fantastic. You don't have to worry about that pee being stuck to the side, because the pee's stuck and won't move, your whistle's not making a sound. Where these P-less whistles really get the job done, and they're much louder and very thunderous, and really make sure everybody knows that you're blowing your whistle, that's for sure. So that's just some of the history I looked up on the makeup and evolution of whistles. And there's, of course, there's all kinds of different styles. You know, we're used to that, you know, that shape of a whistle on a football field, but there's all kinds of different whistles out there through history. I'll leave that for some other website to tell you about. But we just want to make sure we pertain to the game of football and the makeup of these whistles. And I hope you enjoyed this little bit of history. I enjoyed researching it and looking it up. It just was a pondering question in my head after seeing a Bakelite whistle. And yes, indeed, I definitely made them. And I never knew that till this past weekend, till I saw one for myself. So hope you enjoyed that little bit of history. We have football history each and every day here on PigskinDispatch.com. We hope you'll join us back tomorrow for some more great football history. Until then, have a great gridiron day. That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that, Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts. It's found right here on the Sports History Network.